sometimes they will actually bring in things that are legit and are real, but it's so beyond what people can comprehend that humans can do to humans that they're considered incredible.
So do you feel it was purposely done that way to discredit the survivors of it?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And to make them feel insane and to feel hopeless, because if your memories aren't real and yet they keep coming up, it's enough to make you want to die. It really is a lot of times. And that's very scary.
Do you feel that some of the memories of the ritual abuse may have been staged in your experience?
I wish. Unfortunately, I have witnesses. Now, most of them are children, and they're not about to talk about it because they're trying to get on with their own lives, too. But unfortunately, my dad and this other leader in Cobb County later on were very, very sadistic. They seemed to enjoy doing what they did. And, yes, unfortunately, here it was real. But I have also communicated with other survivors who, when they sat down and did like I did and kind of looked around in their memory, they were shown films of rituals. So what I'm beginning to realize is probably a lot of the real rituals are filmed, and then the films are used on some victims as ritual abuse memories that are mostly filmed. So I think there's both.
And when you said it was becoming predictable in terms of was there a pattern to how they had traumatized you in
yes.
terms of programming?
Yes. Thank goodness, yes. The other thing that they would do also was when I would get, okay, let's just say there were some handlers that didn't seem real comfortable working with me because I had Delta programming, which was kill programming. I think they got afraid sometimes, so the other thing they would do a lot of times is apply a stun gun to my body. And what that does is wipe out about 20 minutes of memory if it's held to the muscle long enough. And that would also wipe out part of a transportation memory or coming out of a building, getting into a vehicle, or something like that. So that actually was pretty predictable, too. And I had a police officer in Atlanta look at my arms one time, and I didn't even tell him what I was looking for, and he saw the stun gun marks all over the place. And I had already seen them, and I figured what they were, but it was kind of still upsetting to hear a verification from an officer.
So how did that help you in terms of your recovery to have that pattern there in terms of your
conditioning? It helped me feel sane.
I'm sorry?
It helped me feel sane. And it helped me to realize that these people are not God, that they are limited in even their creativity, that they had to go by patterns, I'm realizing, because they had to do a lot of the same things in order to keep things smooth, keep it efficient, not waste a whole lot of time. I want to mention one more thing about movies. There was something else that happened. Okay, there's a theater in D.C. that is actually called Janus, J-A-N-U-S. I have received information, although I cannot personally verify it, I have pictures of the theater, too, that it is CIA-owned. If that's true, then that may be one of the theaters I was taken to. They said, the investigator I talked to said, seems like it's hardly ever used. And yet, you know, like even just paying taxes and it's an odd place, okay? Theaters I was taken to, too, when there was a team of operatives that came back, they would do something codenamed Cybertron. And what they would do, they would show a movie, and they would have us just scream and yell and everything at the characters on the big movie screen. And what that did was help us our emotions to diffuse so that when we went back home, we had gotten it all out in the movie theater. So they did that, too. So sometimes it was group screen memories that they did, and it still worked. It's amazing.
What other kind of covers do you feel that the perpetrators of mind control have used to cover their tracks?
Well, there's one man who used to reprogram me in Atlanta. He would actually dress up in female costumes sometimes with wigs and dresses and the whole nine yards. I knew a number of men that would actually dress in female outfits with wigs and such. It was silly how they did that because, I mean, you know, they didn't look right, you know, and it wasn't too hard to figure. And then you'd remember the same face and go, oh, my goodness, I can't believe he did that. people probably thought they were, you know, drag queens or something. the other big problem I ran into was that most of these people would use aliases, religiously. Very few of them didn't. Only the ones who were very high level, very well known, did not. I guess partly because they were so, I mean, it'd be so easy to identify them. And partly because I think they were hoping that people would never believe that they had been involved in this stuff and, you know, try and make some of us look like, you know, like Apollo Jones or something, like, yeah, we're just lying to get money or whatever.
So you're talking about public figures.
Right, right. And believe me, I'm for Apollo Jones, okay? But I know that, I think they were just banking on that, first of all, enough of us would die, okay, through suicide programming especially, or just give up or go back to the cults and such. I don't think they expected this many of us to be recovering and waking up and getting angry.
Mm-hmm. And when you were going through your healing process and your recovery, what resources of therapy were available to you, and what did you kind of seek out at that time?
It was awfully limited. Okay, this is one thing I really wish that would come back into vogue, although I know some survivors went to codependency treatment centers and got reprogrammed at them. Some, okay? There's always going to be places that are kind of scuzzy compared to good ones. But the one I went to was excellent because it has helped me so many times to know that when my body is responding a certain way, now I know what I'm feeling and I know what to do with the energy of those feelings. That is incredibly important because as an assassin, they compartmentalize my rage from my childhood, and I have had tremendous rage come out. I've had to do a lot of anger work, which also is very, very helpful. But knowing in advance what is coming up in me helps me to be safer and for those around me to be a lot safer, because then I know what to do with that emotion. So I think that is the very first thing that I wish all survivors would learn, and unfortunately most of them do not. I went to one hospital, which unfortunately may not have great connections anymore, out in Denver. No, it was not Columbine. But I worked with a doctor there who had lost family in concentration camps during World War II, so he was aware of the atrocities that humans will do to humans if they think they can get away with it and if they're very wounded in their own selves. That was very helpful to me, because when I talked to that person, that doctor, he did not go in denial. The biggest help I've had is talking to people who do not go in denial about this stuff and are willing to, not willing to believe, but just, you know, understand that things really can get this bad between humans.
Hmm.
That was also where I first found out, although I kind of knew before and I had been kind of hinting around to people that I thought I had alter personalities, that's where I got it confirmed. And it was a real safe place for me because I was able to let little child alter personalities come out, you know, walking around with a teddy bear and a robe, you know. And that was very important, too, because when such alter personalities come out, they come out the way they went under. And I can't expect them to act my physical age, and it worked. It just does not work. There was one person that I did work with for a year and a half on some deprogramming techniques. Unfortunately, that does not seem to be a healthy situation anymore, but that person did give me some good clues on what to look for inside as far as when memories start coming up. But as far as verifications there, I had to do that work on my own. Mm. And I've had files and files and files on the different people that I've remembered that I have been able to identify and get information on, just tracking their personalities and seeing if it fits what I remembered. And I'm really delighted when one of them acts out in public the way I remember, because I go, uh-huh, here we go, you know. Mm. It's just little bitty tiny proofs, but it's very nice.
Was that one person the only person you worked with that had a knowledge of mind control programming?
Unfortunately, yes. Another thing that really has helped me, although I'm not active with it anymore, there's a deprogramming group on the internet. Excellent group. They've had their roller coaster times, you know. New people come on and it takes a while sometimes because people are not exactly taught social graces, and they have to learn that. That's part of the recovery process. But it has been an outstanding group, and Not just anyone can be on it. You have to be legit, and you have to really be wanting to work at it. But the Internet's been real helpful to me because I've been able to write back and forth with other MK survivors, and they've been just a tremendous support, especially in helping me to accept myself. Now, I've had a problem with several therapists who were not able to help me with that because they were struggling with all of this. But when you're talking to people that have already been there, they know it's real, you don't have to deal with that issue with them. And when I remembered that I was used as an assassin, I hated myself for so long, and I was so down on myself, and I thought surely everyone else would hate me too. And they gradually helped me to understand that, no, it's not my fault. And that probably saved my life too.
I feel that situation is changing somewhat now in terms of therapists becoming more aware of mind control and adjusting their therapy techniques accordingly?
Absolutely. I do not think there are nearly enough therapists who are willing to work with these types of survivors and are willing to learn the right techniques, which are now available. I hope that gets better. We really desperately need more therapists who will do this. But what few I know of that are aware, who do know how to use the right techniques, and just to listen a lot of times without shutting a person down, making them feel like it wasn't real, because that can throw a person into suicide very quickly as well. I think it's going to get better. I think it's going to get a lot better, but it's going to take a while. But it's a whole lot better already than it was when I started out, because I had literally nobody that understood this stuff starting out, and that was horrible, just horrible. It's one reason that I do go public. It's as much as I do, it's one reason that I try to get information out to survivors about how to deal with some of this stuff, so that they won't have to go through the heartaches I did and the tough times I did as severely. I mean, they're still going to have to, but not to that extent.
How do you feel like groups like the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, their effect on resources available for survivors of mind control?
Oh, gosh. That's a real sore subject for me. I have no doubt that there are some people connected to the False Memory Syndrome Foundation who mean well, who really do not understand yet what is going on and who some of their associates are even on the board. I do think it is extremely detrimental, because it seems like all the best therapists, all the ones who are willing to help people self-accept especially, are being shot down one after another, either through harassment, through harassing lawsuits, just being dragged over the coals in the media. I think it is vicious. I think it is absolutely uncalled for. But again, I'm sure there are some people in that organization who really do not know what this is all about. My concern is that several people who are involved strongly with the False Memory Syndrome Foundation, in fact, I just recently heard from an investigator that Julian West is now officially joining. I think
officially joining,
and this is a personal opinion, I think that the main reason these people are doing it is because their backs are to the wall, because some of these people were involved in MK experimentation on children and others, and they're fighting to keep us from being able to testify against them personally. And again, that's my personal opinion, but it is a very strong one. So I think that if more people understood what some of the motivations are for some of these groups, they'd kind of put some space between themselves and the group.
Well, people like Martin Orne and Louis Jolly and West are well documented as being involved in MKUltra and the other mind control experimental programs.
Yes, it's amazing that they still are able to do what they're doing.
Uh-huh.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah. I'd like to talk in a general sense of what other kinds of methods were used to condition you or to reinforce your conditioning. And I'd like to start off with how was electricity used?
Okay. Electricity is very powerful. The problem with electricity for me, that and drugs both, and kind of hypnosis in there too, is that it gets beyond conscious barriers. there were certain things that could be done to me, like torture, regular torture, on a certain part of the body that I could mentally block out, or maybe let it hit a part of my brain, but I would, and I don't understand the physical way this is all done, I just know how I did it, okay? I would protect part of my mind from it influencing the rest of my mind. But electricity hits the brain, and there is no way to protect the brain from it because it's hitting that part of the body as well. There is no defense I know of against electricity, especially electroshock therapy. I hate the word therapy connected to that. I know in some cases it is very important. I've seen people who were so bad in depression that if they had not had that, they would have died, for sure. But to call it therapy for people like us is absolutely uncalled for. So I don't know what you would call it, but electroshocks to the head was just a very, very, very powerful way to break me down in every way. Stun guns, again, I was absolutely terrified of electricity because it is extremely painful. But for me, it was like, sometimes all someone would have to do is hold a stun gun out like they were going to do it, maybe push the button and let the little electrical arc go between the prongs, and I would do anything they said because I was just that terrified. Another thing that they used, there were several other ways they did it. They had a choker type thing. I don't know what you call it, but it was like around my neck where they had like a little box. I guess it was battery operated and remote controlled. And they could shock my throat. In fact, I've had to break through a lot of that this last couple of weeks to be able to do this interview because they conditioned me to believe that they owned my throat and my vocal cords. Another thing they did that was extremely painful, and I still have a lot of very painful body memories, is where they would put a thick belt around my waist, and they would have it on my back, the box, and they would, by remote control, shock my lower spine. Believe me, that will put you on the floor real quick, crawling and begging that they stop and do whatever they say. So that's why I say electricity was one of the worst. But drugs also, they had one particular drug, and it's connected to Curare somehow. In fact, it's got kind of the same name. I can't remember right offhand, but when they would give me that drug, I could still think pretty much. I could see, I could hear, but I could not move my body at all, and they would induce such a sense of helplessness that, again, it was absolutely terrifying knowing that if somebody did something to me, I could not even lift my hand to defend myself. So that drug especially, unfortunately, worked pretty well for me too, on me, I should say.
How was hypnosis used to your awareness?
I was extremely susceptible to hypnosis because I already preferred to go in an altered state other than face reality that was going on around me. So it was already very easy for me to, going into another altered state sometimes for me was self-hypnosis, okay? Mm-hmm. I mean, I didn't know what it was, I just did it. So I was already so prone to that when somebody else did it, especially using Ericksonian techniques, I have gotten some confirmation from a therapist that is probably the most powerful form and most effective form of hypnosis that a MK operative can use. I could sit there and somebody would be talking to me, and if they knew certain codes that were used on me previously, sometimes they could be talking to me and I would see the person's mouth move. And I knew the person was talking to me, but I could not hear the words because the words were hitting another part of my personality that I was still amnesic to. That part of my personality would get orders, and I would not even know what the orders were. This Ericksonian stuff is very, very powerful stuff.
It just goes right to your subconscious.
A person could be talking to me in a very, very smooth tone, never a raised voice, put me in a hypnotic state to where I would see whatever they wanted me to see at the moment.
Did you feel you were more prone to going into a hypnotic state because of your trauma conditioning?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It's something I've worked very hard on. I have done EEG biofeedback also, which is very triggering if you've been hooked up to those type of monitors and wires before. But it really did help me a lot to learn how to control my trancing out. It's been wonderful that way.
So how does that work in terms of helping you heal?
Okay. The person that I worked with, it specializes in that now. And what she did, she would attach little clips to one to each of my earlobes. I mean, there was no electrical current. I need to specify that. Zero electrical current that I would feel, okay? And she'd use some kind of glue to attach the little tiny wires to different parts of my head, depending on, like, the back part of upper back part of my skull is where most of my delta brainwave is centered. The top part of my skull is where the beta brainwave, and which is another reason why they used those Greek letters, because of the actual brainwaves that they were able to activate in different parts of the brain.
So they were utilizing those different parts of the brain with the different systems of programming?
Yeah. I was really shocked when I found that out. Paul Devereaux, who I believe is connected to Stanford SRI, he wrote a book
EarthMind?
Called EarthMind. Yeah. And a person I didn't even know handed me that book at a conference once and walked away. And I was like, oh, my God, you know. So I read through that, and it has some excellent explanations about how all this works. Just excellent. I'm real surprised he wrote it. But it's a real good book to find and read about it. But be aware, it does have an awful lot of triggers in it, too.
Maybe we could talk at this point about those different systems of programming you mentioned, the alpha, beta, and what they signified. What was involved?
Okay. Well, this is what's fun. Okay. When I wrote Daniel Ryder about this, he got my letter just as he had come back from a conference that I believe Corey Denhammond had been presenting this information at. So what the information that Daniel Ryder got in the letter from me was a verification of what Dr. Hammond had shared at the conference. And then that ended up being a validation to me when he told me that Dr. Hammond had mentioned it at the conference. So it was really neat. It verified two different ways. I have read an article by a man named Mark Phillips in a Patriot newsletter from Florida called Outpost of Freedom. Most of what he wrote in there is pretty accurate about the different kinds of programming. But I'd rather say what I have personally experienced with it. Mm-hmm. Alpha for me was what I call my most basic program, and Dad called it that too. That was the program and the brainwave activated that kind of started all the programming. It's where he would, like, get to me first before he started activating any other parts, okay? Beta for me. Another word that they used a lot, a code name, was Barbie. As, well, let's just say one person who is a politician heavily involved in this stuff had even told me that Klaus Barbie was the one who originated that name, which later became Beta. And what that pretty much involves is alter personalities that are used for what I knew as quote-unquote sexual servicing of other individuals. I was used both as a child and as an adult in those alter states, and I had more than one. In those alter states, I would not resist. In those alter states, I had no anger. In those alter states, I was an absolute sexual slave and would do whatever I was told to do. I also was not able to respond sexually, not to the same degree as I would normally in a normal conscious state. Delta, for me, had a lot of military connections. I was used pretty extensively in a Delta state with other military personnel or under the orders of other military personnel. In that state, I was absolutely completely loyal to whoever my quote-unquote superior was. Now, they had a number of subcodes that would activate different parts of that Delta system, like the main one for me, and this is a trigger, so if anyone's listening or reading this and they have Delta programming, please be aware of this tonight. And it was simply Delta 123. But there was other ways that they would use different numbers attached to that word. In that alter state, if they told me to kill somebody, in the room. I would kill somebody in the room. I mean, I had absolute loyalty to that person that was in charge. And in that state, I did not think, I'd had a lot of amnesia to where I was dependent on that person pretty much for my survival. And I knew it, and I was used to it pretty quick. Alpha, beta, delta, beta. That was more into the psychic, and I don't really like the word psychic, by the way. I think that's misused or gives the wrong connotation to a lot of this. It's where they use mental energy from the brain to do a number of things that some people would call psychic. Mark Phillips, the writer of that article, had mentioned that that thetas were called psychic killers, but then he said that the experiments didn't work. Yes, they did. Mm-hmm. Somebody gave him some misinformation on that. They definitely did. A lot of times I ran across, and I don't know if other assassin programmers, victims with theta programming have this, but one of the movies and book themes they used extensively for me with theta training was Dune by Herbert, I believe. And if you ever watch the movie or read the book, it won't be too hard to figure, because what they taught us was that we could cause things to happen to other people through the, and what it was a build up rage inside. It would come out in the form of pure energy, because we would not allow the rage to be in the forefront. We would just use pure thoughts against another person.
So you wouldn't have a physical manifestation of the rage. It would be a mental...
It would be an energy that would hit them, yeah. They had talked about people imploding internally in their digestive organs and stuff. I don't know, because I can't see what goes on inside another body. And I do know that it does work, because one time after I started remembering this stuff, I went to a grocery store, and a woman, I recognized her and felt threatened by her, and I did it before I realized what I was doing. She ended up on the floor in a coma, and this is really gross, okay? I had a serious emotional meltdown and went and prayed like crazy for her in the bathroom, and I felt so horrible. But eventually I realized that, you know, this is something that if it's in me, I've got to learn to take responsibility and control of it, and mostly by getting my rage out, doing a lot of anger work. And so I don't do that anymore. But there's some rather good things that they did with this theta stuff, too. Some people are involved in remote viewing. They tried that with me, and I don't know if it worked because they didn't tell me the results. but there were times I did seem to be able to see people in other locations and what they were doing, what the furniture looked like and such. For me, a lot of times, even consciously, this stuff would happen, like if a friend was in a hazardous situation or something, and I was notified, I could actually see where the person was and what was happening, and I would use it to pray for the person. I also was, as far as I know, and I don't really like to get into this one now, but I was also used to do hands-on healing. It's quite an experience when there's an energy transfer from one body into the other, when you can feel that flow. There was a cult, I call it a cult, although they'll deny it, called Church of the Living Word, that I was a member of back in, mid-70s, where they practiced this a lot, a whole lot. It was a charismatic-type cult, and I was also in several Pentecostal churches where they seemed to do a lot of this stuff. So it kind of kept it going in me. It kind of kept it... active, and I learned a lot from it, but I don't know. My problem with the theta stuff is simply that it is very abusive of other people's boundaries.
Hmm.